finish yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
In towards Brian Murphy. It's hit the post, it's gone out, but it's all over. And Galway are the All-Ireland champions for 1998. Galway have won their 8th All-Ireland final, captained by Ray Silk. And including in their ranks many stars, Mick O'Dwyer trying to congratulate the opposite man, John O'Mahony. O'Mahony's men have prevailed. It's Galway's day.
So O'Mahony's men have prevailed, Conor. This is the 1998 final. Really good final, it has to be said. Galway completely took over the second half. We'll get to that in part two. It was a novelty final because it was Galway's first All-Ireland in 32 years. And, of course, poor Kildare were trying to win their first since 1928. So no matter what happened, I don't think anybody expected both teams to be in the final. Whatever happened, there was going to be a new kind of novelty All-Ireland winner.
Yeah, I'd always hoped that headline that you just said there, Willie, would apply to Mayo, O'Mahony's men end the drought or something like that. But yeah, like it was a novelty final. And when you think about it, that Galway hadn't won one, I think, since 1966, yeah, when they won the three in a row. Obviously, Kildare went back a long way than that. But like, with no offence to Kildare, they had the tradition of winning All-Ireland finals like Galway had, let's say. And by that stage, I know we hadn't got into the new millennium or anything like that, but Galway's drought was nearly as long as Mayo's was at that stage. Mayo had won the final in 51 and then got to finals in 89, 96, 97. So it was beginning to be, like, it was a long time for Galway. And, like, what I hadn't realised until I was looking back on it was that Galway had actually lost four finals in between winning the three in a row in 1966 and then before getting to the final again in 98, which was very unlike them, because I suppose Galway had a tradition of winning. But it was a novel final, and it lived up to the billing as a novel final, because we talked about the 96 replay last week, which when we look back on it wasn't that great. And then, to be honest, the 97 final is probably even worse, definitely from a Mayo point of view, with Maurice Fitz putting in one of the all-time great individual performances. But quality-wise, it wasn't great. So I think in terms of the ones that went before, certainly the 2 years before, this one was a step above.
Yeah, I have to say fair play to you for mentioning Mayo twice already on a show where we're going to be talking about Galway. Well, they were actually 2-1 on favourites, so they were. Like, I mean, they were completely unbackable favourites. They had just beaten the three previous All-Ireland champions, Dublin, Kerry and Meath. You know, it was Mickle versus Paddy in the semi-final, and they got over that. And maybe in a little way, Kildare kind of thought they had the hard work done and probably didn't understand the kind of quality Galway had. And I don't think the whole country did, Conor, because like they had those 521s that came through, Divoli, Savage, Joyce, Donlan, Meehan, and they were kind of unknown nationwide until that All-Ireland final.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, apologies for mentioning Mayo once again, Wooly, but like there was a big win for Galway in that 98. It was the first day out in Castlebar, and it's we might get to it, but like if anyone has a chance to watch back Year Till Sunday, it's the documentary of that year, and it's brilliant. And it's hard for me to say that as a Mayo man, but Mayo, Galway bet Mayo, who had obviously been in the previous two finals in Castlebar, and they did it with that young team. Now, at the time, like, obviously we can look back now and say that the players you mentioned there, Divoli, Joyce, Derek Savage, Declan Meehan, went on to be icons, like some of Galway's best players, let's say. But at that stage, nobody knew how good they were going to be.
Yeah.
I suppose, as well as that, Kildare probably got, you know, they came from a province at that stage. I mean, you know, definitely compared to now. But Leinster was very competitive back then, as you well know, Willie. But like, after Dublin won a few in the early 90s, you were looking at Meath won in 96, I think Offaly won in 97, then Kildare won in 98. So like, there was no dominance like there is now. So to get out of Leinster then was a big deal as well. And then, as you said, beating Kerry at any stage, but especially a Kerry team, especially with Mickle involved, that had won the All-Ireland the year before, probably lulled them into a false sense of security. And then, and again, we'll get to this, but the first half probably didn't help, where I thought Kildare were on top and didn't kind of make the most of their dominance. But Galway really pulled it out of the fire in the second half, and probably could have ended up more comfortable winners than they ended up being.
Yeah, it was Tomás Meehan, actually. Declan Meehan didn't come on. Yeah, he didn't come for another few years. He was on the under, or the 2001 winning team. We actually beat the Galway under-21s that year in Longford in Pierce Park in the All-Ireland semi-final. Had all those under-21s on it. But you could see that day, standing head and shoulders above everybody that day, was Pádraic Joyce. He was unbelievable. He was playing midfield with Michael Donnellan. And you're just thinking, this lad's just on another level. He was absolutely unbelievable. Like, you know, he was just an all-rounder, could actually play midfield that day, you know. But it was a breed of new players. To put five players into that team, with two of them, I'm talking Joyce and Donnellan, being, you know, Hall of Famers, let's call them.
Yeah, had you played it with Pádraic Joyce at that stage? Did you play with Pádraic Joyce at Tralee as well, Willie? Yeah, or maybe not at that stage?
No, I didn't. No, in 99 I played with him in Tralee.
Oh, so that dream partnership was yet to come. but yeah, you're right about the kind of the, and not just, these weren't just any players as we talked about in terms of ability, but look at where they were in the team as well. Okay, Tomás Meehan was a cornerback, but you'd John Dively is the centre back, is the rock of the team there at centre back. You'd Pádraic Joyce at full forward. And you'd Michael Donnellan, who, although he was wearing 10, you know, in the final and would have worn 10 and 12, flitted between 10 and 12 for Galway for years, was basically everywhere and was unremarkable on his day and certainly on this day as well. So to arrive with that, to have a team with that level of, you know, you're lucky if an under 21 team develops maybe two to three starters, but to develop five and five of that caliber was unheard of, and like they obviously went on to inspire Galway to the success that they had that year.
Yeah, I was on Hill 16 for this one because the Laois Minors were going for three minor All-Irelands in a row in 1998. They lost to Tyrone, a pretty unbelievable Tyrone team who went on to great things. And I do remember Sonia O'Sullivan. I don't know what she won in 1998, but she did a lap of honour around the stadium, and she started down at the canal end, and she got a huge ovation off the Galway fans down there and all the flags and everything, and then ran up in front of the Cusack stand and got a huge ovation there, and then came around to Hill 16 to where all the Kildare fans were and the Laois, some of the Laois fans, and then took off her jumper to reveal a Kildare jersey. So she totally double crossed the Galway fans down on the other terrace. She got all the adulation and with a Kildare jersey hidden under her jumper. I think her grandfather had a pub in Kildare or something. She has Kildare connections anyways, but it's definitely a memory of that one. It was Mick O'Dwyer's 21st All-Ireland final and unfortunately his last.
Jesus. That was very devious of Sonia O'Sullivan. That's a very tenuous connection, I would say, between between Kildare and Cork. Maybe there's something in the Larry Tompkins connection and a couple other players that went from Kildare to Cork. But just how much, I think she had won the... She may have won or got a silver, I think, at the World Championships, Gothenburg, around that time, because it was obviously just after Atlanta as well. But talk about that was obviously planned out, you know, to go to the Galway first. Imagine she went the other way around.
I would feel cheated on if I was cheering her only to reveal a Kildare jersey then. But Mick took a little bit of criticism after this game. It was the decision to play Soss Dowling on Michael Donnellan. It was one of the biggest talk about. Soss was Kildare's oldest defender. He wouldn't have been on it, only their fullback Quinn was injured, and John Finn went in at fullback on Pádraic Joyce. But then I was thinking, geez, my memories of that is, geez, Soss took an awful doing off Michael Donnellan. And then when you're looking at the game back, Donnellan, first unbelievable run, you know, the iconic one that set up Sean O'Dwyer, where he actually got the ball from a knockdown from Tomás Meehan in the full back line. Yeah. And like, I mean, he was dropping so deep. You wouldn't be too critical of Soss not for following him all the way back there. Like, a wing back usually wouldn't follow him all the way. And then Donnellan made his break in the field and straight up the middle as Soss was trying to kind of come across and close in on him. And it was Eddie McCormack actually tried to follow Donnellan. He went forward, hand passed the ball off, and then it was a brilliant, brilliant point. And then his second point off Soss, or his first point off Soss, came from John Dively clearance. We're going to call John Dively John Delivery. The Boar's Head was telling me to call him that. And we'll get to him in part two, because his passes were just off the charts. They were incredibly brilliant. And his long pass was blocked down. And Donnellan just nipped in ahead and flicked it on with his foot. And then he was away. You know. And then they made the switch. You know, and it was Anthony Rainbow really took the scutcheon off Michael Donnelly, but everybody kind of remembers it for Sos Dowland taking an awful do, you know what I mean, doing off Michael Donnelly.
I think I counted 12 minutes last night when Anthony Rainbow was given the what must to be the worst job ever in an All-Ireland final. Here, mate, it's your turn to go over to Michael Donnelly, who's obviously flying. But it was only 12, so Sos Dowling only had 12 minutes. At that stage, listen, Michael Donnelly was beaten into everyone. He'd beaten them to everything, but Michael Donnelly would have been beaten to everyone, anybody, to anything at that stage. As you said, that iconic solo run that he did, he got the ball with his back to goal, going towards his own goal in the 13. And like, if people are blaming Sos, I mean, he must have ran past six players, including Dermot Early at the start. I think Willie McCreary, maybe Niall Buckley in there as well, before laying it off to Derek Savage. Derek Savage gives the little dink pass to Sean Ogdepoer. But that's like, maybe Mikko didn't have a plan for, you know, Michael Donnelly in advance, and he could be criticised for that, but he can't be criticised for the fact that Sos Dowling was left on him for the whole game, because the fact is he wasn't even left on him for half of the first half. So, you know, we might get into whether Mikko deserved criticism for maybe some tactics in general, but if he's to be isolated for that alone, I think that would be very harsh.
Yeah, no, it definitely would be harsh. Jeez, Niall Buckley had an absolute nightmare, so he did. Like, I mean, he was their talisman, he was their main player in midfield, and he just constantly gave the ball away. Like, I mean, it was incredible. Just launching balls. I'd say poor Martin Lynch got taken off on account of Buckley giving him some terrible ball, and Buckley was so poor in the first half. I think Mikko was kind of subtly telling him to cop on. Mikko, Marty Morrissey said in the sideline, Mikko offered Buckley a new pair of boots.
He did. Yeah, he did. He did. I just on that Buckley, Willie, I can't disagree with the fact that he was a bit wasteful in possession and stuff like that, but I would ascribe that to many more players on the Kildare team than Niall Buckley. And I thought it was a tactic. I thought that there was very little direction to a lot of the ball being played into the full forward line. And I think they were probably told to just let it in. And in fairness to Niall Buckley, when I was looking back on it last night, I can't remember, and you know, this is a good thing and a bad thing because he wasted a lot of it, but I can't remember anyone being on the ball more for Kildare than Niall Buckley. And there was a couple of times, you know, when Kildare were flagging badly in the second half, that I thought, if nothing else, he got on the ball. He kicked a score, I think, off his left foot. Now, in fairness to him, he tried to kick a few more scores that went wide. But, like, whatever about the quality of his performance, I don't think you can accuse him of giving up, let's say. No. I'll say that in his credit.
No, and in fairness to him, he was crying after the game. The cameras panned on him. He was inconsolable. But, like, I mean, he was just on so much ball. It was sticking out a mile. Because I was like, he'll hardly just drive this one. And he did. You're right. He scored a point. It was off his right. He played a 1-2 with Brennan, Pádraig Brennan, who had come on as a sub. And I was just like, why don't you just play those kind of controlled balls? Like, everything doesn't have to be launched. But again, maybe you're right. Maybe that was the direction they were given. John Finn, how did he stay on the field? Like, I mean, in the second minute, he led with the elbow straight into Niall Finnegan's jaw. The referee clearly saw it because he gave Niall Finnegan a free. Finnegan ended up putting the free wide. And then on the same player again in the second half, Finnegan's completely true on goals, and Finn comes out of nowhere. Again, elbow straight up at the side of the head. And it was that big of a hit that Finnegan probably he kicked it wide from about 21 metres out straight in front of the goals.
Yeah, it did detract from Niall Finnegan. We'll get to that as well. And not only did it not detract from his performance, but it didn't knock a hair out of place in his head. And in the late 90s, Niall Finnegan had one of the most iconic spiky haircuts in the GAA I think I've ever seen, as well as the collar that he used to wear up, but didn't, disappointingly, for this final that I noticed last night. But you're right, John. Like, what I thought when watching it back last night, first of all, was that there was, especially early stages, there was a level of intensity that impressed me for that era. I didn't think that, you know, I would have said that kind of level of intensity probably didn't arrive until maybe the Tyrone team of the early to mid 2000s. But also that John Bannon let everything go. You could not buy a free off John Bannon in the 98 final. He was not. There was no soft ones going anyway. So, and the thing about that early as well is, rightly or wrongly, that was 2 minutes into the game, and John Bannon had said, no, he didn't even caution John Finney. He didn't even tick him. But he's probably thinking at this stage, I'm not giving a red card. Probably with memories of the brawl from 96, a couple of years earlier, where there was two red cards dished out early. So John Finn was a lucky boy. But like that day, I'd say there was plenty of other lucky people, because John Bannon was not giving Anton away easy.
Yeah, no, that's true. Come here, Conor. We'll leave it there because Niall Finnegan actually joins us on the line now. Come here. Niall, what was John Finn's problem with you?
I thought he was marking Mikey D, Mikey Donlan, but I don't recall specifically getting hit by John, but I know he was in the Air Force, so maybe he had both wings up, but on both those hits, but and certainly he was a formidable opponent. So if he did connect, then I would have been in trouble. But I know it was a very clean game from memory. I think it was John Bannon was the referee. I used to see John at various race meetings during the year. I think he was a big man for the Flash, like myself, Leopardstown and the Curragh and whatnot. And I had a good chat with him at John O'Mahony's book launch there up in Ballardrain a couple of years ago. So he did an excellent job refereeing the match. And I think it was a very good, clean and open game from my memory, albeit 22 years ago now at this stage.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. You were 2-1 out on outsiders. Like, I mean, all the talk was about Kildare and Mickle, and they'd beaten the last three All-Ireland champions. You know, you were kind of coming in under the radar with five new fellas on your team that most of the country might not have known an awful lot about.
That's true. I mean, Leinster was, let's be fair, was a good bit stronger than Connacht at the time. They had Meath and Offaly were strong at the time. Offaly took us in the league quarterfinal fairly comfortably earlier on in the year. And I suppose, notwithstanding that Mayo had got to two World Ireland finals, Galway hadn't been on the national scene for a long period of time at final level, not since 1983. And we had got to semi in 1995, beaten by Peter Canavan, Inspired Tyrone. But Kildare under Mickle was a wave of euphoria, and they had taken out Kerry, I think, in the who were reigning All-Ireland champions in the semi-final, and quite comfortably, really. So they were on the crest of a wave and were quite rightly favourites. I didn't realise we were that rank outsiders. But we came with a wet sail. We'd have a good run through Connacht. I think the Mayo match was shown recently on TG Gar. I got a load of texts. I was out golfing in Power Scorch. It was a nice afternoon, so I didn't get to see it. But that was in the first round of the Connacht Championship. Had a good run through Connacht. A very difficult Connacht final against very tough opponents, Roscommon. Only beat them after a replay down the Hyde. And then I suppose it was a low key victory against Derry in the semi final. So we came in under the radar, and as you correctly pointed out there, we had a blend of youth and experience, and in particular the young lads were probably an unknown quantity in terms of the national stage at that stage. Obviously they'd come up through the ranks, and you know, everyone knows their names. You got your Paul Clancy, Derek Savage, Smalls Meehan, Decky Meehan, Tommy and Porter Joyce, and Mikey Donlan, of course. I'm probably forgetting a few there, but they had they've won the Hogan Cup and gone very close in the All-Ireland Minor. And a few of them had played with the older brigade in 97 under Val Daly and Gerry Fahey, and just bit by Mayo and Tuman in a cracking game. So, and as I said earlier, we've been beaten by Offaly in the league quarterfinals. So in terms of the national exposure, the young brigade hadn't really played their hand. So we had a number of aces in the pack. So that was probably the reason that the odds were so skewed on that day.
Exactly. Were you sitting around in 1996? You know, it was a really good Mayo team around. You had a good team too. You won the Connacht, obviously, like you said, in 95. Were you sitting around thinking, geez, there's four or five really good young lads coming up here now, you know, that could add an extra sparkle to this team?
Not really. Doesn't necessarily work out like that, because there's plenty of young lads. You've often heard the phrase "the great minor," and we'd had a load of lads to go over the years.
Yeah,
say again, Willie.
That's a Galway hurling problem.
But Galway's a fun city. There's a bohemian vibe down there, still is, and guys can get. Can go by the wayside, if you like, especially if they enjoy themselves too much in college and whatnot, and I probably would have come under that moniker back in the day. But no, I don't think there was any. We knew they were coming, but you suppose you never know how good they're going to be. And, you know, some of the you probably only get one or two players off of any good minor team, and I'm sure Kerry will find that out the next couple of years. So, I mean, there was no guarantee that those seven or eight players on a good minor team would necessarily come through and, you know, make it at senior level. It takes, there's so much more to it, particularly in terms of application. And even back then, it was buying into the process, and it's a way of life. I remember saying one night at a team talk that I was married at the time, that my work in nightclubs was done, but a lot of those young lads, 18, 19, were, you know, still you know, entitled to go out and enjoy themselves. But so no, there was never a light bulb moment, or we need to make the most out of these guys. It just kind of morphed over those over that period. I think we're not sure if Bosco had blooded any of those particular individuals over the period 94 to 96. I don't think so, but certainly 97, Val Daly had realised that these guys were performing very well in Sigerson, Pádraig Doylestown, and Kerry with Michael Donlan, Tomás Meehan with DCU, and of course John Dively and Derek Savage with UCD, and others with UCG. So, you know, that's always a good barometer. Sigerson, you probably get more out of Sigerson in terms of guys going out to senior inter-county than you would from any minor team or under 20 as it is now. So it was Val Daly, I think, introduced a number of them for the Mayo match, and obviously we only got one run out that year, but certainly Tomás Meehan played cornerback and Michael Dallin played wing half forward, and then we were blending in those guys with the more experienced guys, and we were missing a couple of the like Kevin Walsh was missing in 97 from memory, and I think Ja maybe might have been out of the equation in 97 as well. So it was a combination of those the senior guys putting the shoulders to the wheel for another couple of years and gelling with the younger guys that you mentioned.
Right, okay. You pretty much played out in the half-forward line, and you left the two younger fellas inside. And I have to say, from watching the game back last night, if it wasn't for Donlan and Ja Fallon's freakish performances, your second-half performance would be talked about for a long, long time.
Well, thanks very much. That's much appreciated, Colm. I'm not sure about me playing in that role. I mean, from memory, I was, like to borrow a phrase from the recent crisis, you know, corner forwards and corner backs, kind of isolated in their own little patch. It was a different game back then. You didn't have the movement of players. Certainly from that final, from memory, you might have had some of the half-backs and half-forwards, the likes of Anthony Rainbow and Sean O'Dupuir and Dermot Early and Michael Donlan, you know, the fit guys, if you like, would have been, you know, going up and down the pitch. But the rest of us kind of stayed in our own positions. That was the way the game was played. And maybe I did roam a bit across Pádraig Joyce and Derek Savage left and right. But from memory, I would think I was stuck in the corner for a lot of the time. I would have got a nosebleed if it went over the 50, like, you know.
So. I think Donlan dropped so deep, you won a good bit of your ball running out to the 40. Maybe that was more. That was probably
okay. Yeah, maybe that's right. Yeah, but certainly, you know, the game has evolved so much, and I unfortunately gave it up in 2001. They were very inconsiderate then and went and won at them without me, so sure I wasn't missed at all. But if I kept on going for another couple of years, just thinking about it there recently, with Tyrone being the game changer, I wouldn't have fancied I would have been doing well to hold the likes of Ryan McMinnon scoreless in a match, like, you know, would have been the cornerbacks scoring more than the corner forwards. So thankfully myself and Brian Lacey kind of stayed close enough to goal, so I was able to have an impact. But yeah, I mean, Ja and Mikey did you know, they were phenomenal engines, and certainly you know, there was a great feeling of space in the second half. But you know, it was I can't remember that much again about the game, Colin, but certainly it was, you know, not quite the preferable game of two halves, but we definitely blitzed them in the first quarter of the second half. But you need a lot of luck, as you know, when you're in your own Leinster final, you need a lot of luck to win these big games. And I think Pádraig Brennan had a very good chance close to the certainly in the last 5 minutes, that was deflected over the bar. And if that had gone in, I think it might have been a 1-point game or even level. So, you know, it was a 4-point game in the end, but, you know, it was tight right throughout, like, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Even though you completely dominated the second half, you know, for nearly the entirety of it. Come here, you mentioned you retired. It was 2000 or 2001. You were only 30. That was a big decision then. Like, I mean, 30 is not too old, and you knew there was a brilliant team there.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was, you know, Seth Floyd in Dublin at the time, and had been travelling up and down from Dublin for 5 years, and married and looking to start a family and whatnot. And most of my client base was built up here, and I was playing for St. Sylvester's in Malahide at the time under Brian Talty. And, you know, look at, you know, yourself, Colm, the amount of effort, time and effort that goes into being a county player. Obviously, it's moreover, it's a full-time job now at this stage, and I don't know how many self-employed guys are actually playing the game at the highest level. But I'd kind of said I put my shoulder to the wheel for one last push in 2000, and we pretty much started in October, I think it was, playing challenge matches here, there and everywhere, in places like Tang on the border between Longford and Westmeath and other places that nobody's ever heard of. And it went, like, it was a full 10, 11 months. I think we played Clare 5 times in Ennis that summer, like, you know. So all the travelling has taken us time. I mean, I probably spent enough time in Maynooth to be trained and ordained. I mean, there was no, the road structure wasn't there, and we were spending an enormous amount of time on the road. And yeah, I mean, I mentioned Ryan McMiniman and these, you know, the new breed of players that are coming up. I was never, you know, an athlete per se, and they were, it was becoming more an athlete's game. So I just thought it was probably the right time to leave the stage. In hindsight, that was probably a poor call, because you know, I could have had a role to play in the 2001 series, like, you know. I mean, Tommy Joyce came in and ultimately, if you like, replaced me at number 15, but he was definitely a third man midfielder, and, you know, so he played a completely different role, and who knows, they mightn't have won it if Tommy hadn't been involved and played that role. Although I often, I'd be slagging him saying that he was the genesis. He started off this back pass into the goalie. I think he played a back pass to Lofty at one stage with about 5 minutes to go in the final against Meath. So yeah, he can take the lion's share of the blame for the present state of Gaelic football, if you like, in terms of the negative end of things. But I think we're slowly turning the wheel there, in particular with
thanks to Pádraig Joyce, I suppose, in another way. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But was it difficult to watch the 2001 win then, though? Because, like, we all say, oh, it was great and it was all about the other team. But on a personal level, it's probably difficult coming so soon after you finished.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I heard Alan Quinlan there one day on the radio missing out on the great victory with Bidrickle's 3 tries against France back in 2000. So it's always hard, you know, you'd like to be out there. But I had made the decision. I had made the decision in 2000, so it wasn't something I had been mulling about it for a long while. And, you know, it was an informed decision. And once you make the decision, you can't, there's no rowing back. And, you know, you probably realised yourself once you retired, you're kind of looking back saying, Jesus, how did I get the time to you're playing your club football and whatnot. You say, well, how do I get the time to fit in county football into my busy work and life schedule? So that was kind of the way it was for me. Just went full steam ahead into the practice here, Brandon Coscofinian, and you know, played a bit of football with Sylvester's for a year, and then into your social soccer and your golf and whatnot in terms of your leisure pursuits. But yeah, I mean, it was probably only at the final that it kind of hit me. And I didn't miss per se being involved on the football end of it. I missed kind of missing out on the crack. And, you know, you'd soldiered with these guys for, in a lot of cases, 10 years, the likes of Sean O'Dupuir, Guy Fahey, played football in college and right throughout our county careers. You kind of missed that end, and the fact that you're missing out and celebrating with them, and the team holiday. They went to Thailand the following year, I think, you know, so I missed out on that. That's what I missed more so than the actual football, because, as you know yourself, it's high pressure. And, you know, I mean, Dara O'Shea said he's never enjoyed an All-Ireland final as such. Like, he only enjoys them in the aftermath, and only if they've won. Yeah. So, I mean, we lost in 2000 after replay. Probably we should have won it the first day. And, you know, it was a heavy heavy toll and took they went to get over it. But you know, I made my decision and stuck by it, and you know, that's such is life. But you know, I have no regrets in terms of the football career, and was lucky enough to win one. I mean, let's face it, like Galway football was in the doldrums when Bosco McDermott took it over, and we evolved under Bosco and realised we weren't that far off. And then Val and Gerry Fahey took it on another step in 97. And then I suppose John O'Mahony galvanised all the resources then at his disposal, including the new breed of players coming through. And, you know, just thank my blessings that I was lucky enough to be on that team and around at the time. So, you know, no point getting greedy. But, yeah, some regrets. But, you know, in reality, in the greater scheme of things, you know, well happy with the haul at the end of it, like, you know.
Yeah. I was reading a quote about you that you made about winning the All-Ireland, and you said, before you win it, it's a mythical thing. And I can completely relate to that because I've never won it. And of course, it is mythical. And then you said, afterwards, you realise it's another medal won. It doesn't change your life. You don't get out of bed thinking, wow, life moves on, which makes me feel okay about not having one.
Yeah, well, look, it's... And I think, yeah, Jim was referencing that as well in his recent documentary, you know. And, you know, at a certain point he was saying he didn't feel fulfilled as a player because he didn't have one. But look, it's not everyone's born in Kilkenny or Kerry, like, and it's probably even more reinforced in Gaelic football terms in recent years, you know. Dublin and Kerry and Tyrone have dominated, and let's hope there's maybe a change in the guard this year. But it's, you know, it. I don't know when I come up with that quote, but yeah, it maybe does change some lives if they go on to, you know, some of the superstars that they go on to open pubs and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And they maybe didn't have a concrete career path, shall we say. So, and then, you know, other opportunities open up in terms of media and this, that, and the other. So it maybe just, I was speaking from a personal point of view, that it didn't necessarily change my life because, I mean, I stayed in Dublin, so you're kind of very much under the radar. But yeah, I mean, they, you know, as I said, it was just feel privileged to be around at a time, and having had two excellent managers in Bosco, Val, and in particular, John O'Mahony, to, you know, galvanize all the players and the backroom staff that we had at our disposal. I mean, back in 98, like, we had Mick Byrne as physio, was recently seen on the Boys in Green documentary, and I wish him well, and he did an excellent job and a great man to have in the dressing room. We had Gerard Tignan, I think, who's back under PJ as the doctor, an excellent GP in the Tuam district. We had a psychologist, Billy, a surname escapes me, from Scotland. And I mean, John also brought the county board and all sponsor Tommy Varden on board. And actually, from memory, we also had Eddie O'Sullivan, a regular contributor to News Talk. Jesus. There. Yeah. He was our strength and condition coach. I mean, he was peripheral, like, in that, but he definitely set out a program. So, you know, if John hadn't come on board in September 97 and with a plan, I mean, there's no way we were coming from Division 3 and winning All-Ireland without him galvanising those resources and using all his diplomatic skills to coach all those parties and the county board and all the players and get us all singing off the one hymn sheet.
Yeah, he's definitely good at that. Come here, have you fallen back in love with Galway football now under PJ?
I know, fairness to Kevin, he had done an excellent job with the resources at his disposal, and they won two Connacht and they got to the league final. I went to against Dublin, unlucky enough that day. Also, was it the beaten by semi-final? I was away that year on holidays, so I didn't get to see the match live or go to it. But, you know, weren't too far off. And again, he's building, PJ is building on that. There certainly is, there does seem to be a market change in direction in terms of the style of play, which I would certainly welcome as a forward. And we're playing Shane Walsh a lot closer to goal, and we got Damon Comer coming back, and Eamon Brannigan and others contributing, and it's remarkable to see Paul Conroy. I was at that match, the Kerry match in Croke Park, and winced when it happened. Like, it was a very dry summer, and it was the only wet day we had during the whole of that summer, I think, and it was just one of those things, and he slid in, and we all knew in the crowd, not that there was too many at it, we all knew that it was serious, but to come back, it was remarkable, and he seems to be, you know, back fighting fit, and he playing well, and either as a, you know, a super sub role or starting from play. And then, yeah, he's PJ certainly unearthed a couple of new defenders as well. Is it Will Kearns number at the fullback? And the goalkeeper name escapes me, but he was at the Monaghan match down there, stadium there, freezing cold day about a couple of months ago. And he certainly has a great presence about him and good kick out. So, and then, you know, he seems to be building a strong squad, and it seems to be have a very direct style of play now and getting the ball in quickly. And who knows, this current crisis could be an opportunity for the likes of Galway, Tyrone, Donegal, possibly Cork, Mayo to upset the big two, because it's going to be it's a new world out there, like, you know.
Exactly. Come here, Niall. Thanks very much for taking the call. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
No problem, Colm. Okay. Enjoy the rest of the day. Okay. Take care.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We Paulie, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
like, what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I'll tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
So yeah, Galway 1-14, Kildare 1-10. It finished off. We'll start with the first half. It wasn't the greatest first half in the world, other than Michael Donlan kind of lighting it up, I suppose. Galway started brilliantly and then went completely out of it after the Kildare goal. And then Kildare took over without really playing any great stuff at all, Conor.
Yeah, well, I think it was 13 minutes, I think, before Kildare got their first score. And like, I thought up to that stage, I thought for the first 20 minutes that Kildare had were the better team, were the more dominant team. And I think we mentioned Niall Buckley in the first half, but I thought that in terms of, and like, midfield battles tended to be midfield battles back then between the four men in the middle. And I thought that Niall Buckley and Willie McCreary for Kildare were well on top of Kevin Welsh and Sean O'Donnell earlier on. Problem is that they didn't get any value out of that dominance, for me anyway, in that, like, Galway kind of sucker punched them for the first few minutes, in that despite the fact that they weren't on top, they had, you know, they were getting bits and bobs off the likes of Michael Donnell. And I think Derek Savage was showing well. I don't think he scored. We mentioned Niall Finnegan earlier on as well. So by that stage, it took to the middle of the first half for Kildare to really settle, and then even when they did settle, to me, they didn't capitalize on that dominance either, because I thought, and I mentioned this in part one, that I thought that the Kildare tactic was a bit too straightforward, and that they were told just to lob it in to the they had Carlo Dwyer and Martin Lynch Lynch in the full forward line to lob it in, trust them to get the better of the men, and hopefully they get scores from that. And they did eventually from breaking ball. But there was absolutely oceans of space in the Galway full back line. I couldn't get over it. Like, today'd be criminal, and there'd be like managers be putting five sweepers back there. But and just to that end, Gary Fahey, and particularly Tomás Mannion. You mentioned Michael Donlan lighting up the first half. Like, I was writing some notes last night, and I just wrote in capital letters, Tomás Mannion. Like, in terms of a cornerback's performance for the first 20 minutes, I don't know if I've seen anything like it. And the first half in general, he wasn't bad in the second half either. But because of that, because of the fact that, like, when there were duels, I think the Galway full back line particularly were getting the better of their men. And I thought that Kildare need to be far more sophisticated with the ball they were putting in, because it tended to be very long, very direct, and very little shape on it, creating battles where there didn't need to be, where they could have put it out in front and, you know, put it out in space for their forwards to win, which is something what Galway did in the second half. Yeah. And then the problem for Kildare then is that, like, Galway turned around so quickly at the start of the second half. So whatever lead the Kildare had built up was for nothing within 10 minutes of the start of the second half.
They got, like, Kerrigan got a point from a long ball. Carlo Dwyer got a point from a long ball, kind of breaking out.
Yeah.
You're right, Mannion was all over Lynch, and Lynch was probably the target for a lot of those long balls. But, like, with those 50-50 balls with a lot of hang time, you're right, Tomás Mannion was absolutely outstanding. I was going to hold off. He's down for performance of the weekend, but he was absolutely brilliant. And he was destroying Lynch to the point that Lynch got taken off. And, like, Lynch was Kildare's best forward, let's be honest. And he just couldn't get into the game because Kildare didn't play any controlled football at all. And unless they thought there was a weakness aerially, it's the only thing that you can imagine, they thought there was a weakness aerially in the Galway full back line, but there certainly wasn't, because there were Mannion was breaking it out, Fahy was breaking it out. Carlo Dwyer kind of came into it before half time. His first point was a nice turn. Second one again, it was just there was no control to Kildare's play. And maybe if that's Mikko's tactics, you know, because I remember in the second half, it was very obvious. Anthony Rainbow took a terrible sideline or a terrible free kick quickly to Carl Lacey. And it went out over the sideline right in front of Mikko. And you could see Mikko giving out to him and pointing in at Brian Murphy, who had come on at this stage, you know. So Mikko didn't like any messing around with it.
Yeah, and I think we have to be conscious of the era as well, and that, like, that, because we mentioned that last week, that I think it was a tactic, and letting the ball in, regardless of the shape on it, was regarded as a good tactic, and it was the attitude was, we let it in, you win your own ball up there, basically. And now, like, you know, there's something to be said for that in terms of, like, you know, forwards of a modern era would complain that they don't get the ball in at all because people are trying to put it in too perfectly. But I thought that just because the level of space that was in there, that it was just as easy to try and put a bit of shape or trying to put a direction, like, on a delivery in, rather than just absolutely launching it in high. And I don't know whether Mikko identified it as weakness. I don't know, but I don't know where it would have came from either, because, like, I can't remember the Galway team of that year, you know, like, having any issues. With Gary Fahy, like, had a good year of fullback. Tomás Mannion, having cleaned out Joe Brawley in the semi-final against Derry, had another brilliant game here. The only thing I can think of, Mike McNamara conceded two goals against, going back to Mayo again in the first game. So there might have been a question mark about his ability under the high ball, because he wasn't the biggest of keepers either. So maybe Mikko Dwyer thought there might be change there. And actually in the second half, they threw out the name of the sub escapes me, but they threw the big lad into the full forward line and tried that again. Yeah. Brian Murphy, sorry, and they hit the post at the very end as well. So maybe that was the thinking, but I just thought it was a wasted opportunity, and it kind of even highlighted a bit more when you saw the type of ball, as you referenced already, that was going in from John Dively and some of the Galway midfielders into the Galway forwards in the second half.
But that's the thing. If they were the tactics from the start, why not start Brian Murphy? Now, I know he was a bit of an impact sub, but start him on the edge of the square. Get those balls in. You see, they were kind of carrying Pádraig Craven as a free taker. He was brilliant from frees, but he wasn't up to an awful lot from play. And there was none of the other forwards you'd really drop. Because to be fair, the two bright forwards for Kildare in the first half were Eddie McCormack and Dermot Early. Like, Early had the beating of Silk the whole way through the first half. He had an early wide when Silk slipped. Like, Dermot Early should have kept going with that. In his defence, he's very young, and it was his first All-Ireland. You know, sometimes you can just say, I've turned. Maybe his plan was to turn and point. And then when Silk slipped, he kind of stayed doing what he had planned to do in the first place. But he was drifting into the edge of the square. He was a target for kickouts. He played very well. But Kildare probably just didn't play through their half forward line enough. Kerrigan came so deep, and Dively didn't really follow him at all. So, you know, maybe the only way to do it was to get it in long over Dively.
Yeah, but they had some, like, Eddie McCormack could play a bit of ball, and Kerrigan at 11 could play a bit of ball as well. So they had that option there. And actually, like, Galway tried to, in the second half particularly, Galway tended to counter-attack a bit more. And like, why wouldn't they when you have somebody like Michael Donnellan to break the line? And Kildare actually at times had to be a bit more sophisticated with their kick pass and were kind of delivering these kind of bouncy, you know, one bounce balls into the forwards because Galway maybe had their full back line packed. So they did try that in the second half a bit more. But that's it. Like, they had a couple of forwards that could have done the damage. Like, I think Eddie McCormack got 2 points in the first half. Carlo Dwyer, when he eventually got the better of Gary Fahey. Now, it was only for a short while. I think he kicked two very quick points in quick succession. But you imagine if they were getting that ball more often, that they would, I think they only had 1-4 or 1-5 kicked at halftime, despite being completely dominant. And they would have opened up a far bigger cushion. Whereas the case that, like, with Pádraig Joyce's goal for Galway, that just got Galway right back into it when they maybe didn't deserve to be.
Well, Kildare were known at the time for hand passing out of defence, you know, and getting a few hand passes, getting out into that space and then putting it in. And you mentioned intensity at the start of the show. It was very obvious that Galway kind of knew this was coming.
Yeah.
And their forwards buzzed around. Now, I know you mentioned Tyrone in 2003, but I was surprised at the intensity, the Galway forwards, known for their brilliance, how they were willing to work hard, you know, to try and stop that.
Yeah, to a man, actually. And, you know, one of the features of the first half was you're right, the Kildare like to kind of, you know, throw it out with short passes up until they maybe got to the 45 and then deliver, or maybe halfway. And a feature of the first half was how difficult it was for them to do that first half, to get those hand passes. And not only that, just when the Kildare half backline were about to kick the ball, that a Galway hand came from nowhere. Shea Welsh did it at one stage. Jaff Allen definitely did it. Derek Savage was buzzing about everywhere in the first half, making life a nuisance for the Kildare full backline. But I like that impressed on me last night as well, that I didn't remember, especially that Galway team. That Galway team are known for being, they're a purist team. Do you know what I mean? For brilliant scores from Jaff Allen, from the likes of Michael Donnell and stuff like that. But probably because of the reputation that they've got, it's taken away from the work rate that they had as well. And they especially had it in that final. That's I would imagine, like, John O'Mahony, to be fair to him, was a particularly meticulous coach, and I would imagine he spotted that with Kildare and kind of had the Galway forwards prepared for it. And had they not done that, considering that, like, they were being dominated in midfield as well, Kildare could have been, you know, that they could have had the lead that they deserved, which would have been more than the 3 or 4 points that they were carrying in at half time.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, tactically as well, Finnegan played out in the half-forward line pretty much and left just Savage and Joyce inside, and Donlan was dropping really, really deep. Donlan dropping really, really deep, not really like a Brian Duher dropping really, really deep, but getting back there and making his runs from deep, you know? So, like, I mean, again, in 1998, this was all cutting-edge stuff, you know what I mean? It was tactical and it was smart.
Yeah, completely. I mean, like, back then you would have maybe expected, you might have had a third midfielder, I think, every now and again, but you wouldn't have associated that era with those sorts of tactics. But especially for Donlan, it worked like a dream, because Michael Donlan was picking up the ball and getting a run on anybody before they had a chance to stop him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was that quick that, like, as I said earlier, that ball that he picked up on the 13, for example, he was running towards his own goal, you know, with his back to goal and with his man right up on top of him, and then managed to turn, and before you knew it, he was absolutely gone. And his best moments throughout the game, but particularly in that first half, came when he was coming from deep, from well beyond halfway, and then just giving a 1-2 and getting on the end of it, and either kicking points himself or, you know, giving it off as he did to Derek Savage, who gave it to Sean O'Dwyer. But I must say that, like, whether it was the camera angler or just because of Michael Donlan's sheer pace, that he made Croke Park look a lot smaller looking than it does now. I mean, it seemed to me like he had covered, like, you know, 13-13 in, like, something like 6 seconds. Whereas the way you look at it now, that would take a lot longer than that. But that's, I mean, like, everything that could have gone right, I suppose, for Michael Donlan went right in the day. But that was a particular feature. And I'd imagine that's something that John O'Mahony had worked on beforehand as well.
No, definitely. He was just freaky with his pace. I played in America with him in 1999. Mayo had beaten them early in the Connacht Championship, and he went out to St. Brendan's in Chicago. And I was out there that year. And, like, I mean, the man was just a freak with that pace. Now, he didn't give a monkeys about playing out there. He was out there for a holiday. He didn't want to know about the football. He just didn't care about it. But you just see him. The odd time he would give a damn. Do you know that kind of way? Yeah. He would just take off. Like, I was pretty fast on the field. But you're not staying anywhere near this fella. It was just a freaky level of pace that I'm not, like, maybe Shane Walsh in the modern game could be with him, but I'm not sure he would over a long distance.
But it's a style of running that Michael Donnell looked like he glided over the turf, for example. Yeah. So like there's loads of fast players in the game today, for example, but you can tell that they're absolutely going out 100%. Whereas I think Shane Walsh is the nearest comparison, you know, to the way he kind of glides across the turf and is going faster than everybody without it looking like he's going faster than everybody. And actually looks like he's another 20% in him.
Could go faster, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And like the most perfect example of that was and actually probably not the iconic solo run, but the one where it just kind of, the point he got where it just kind of ran into his path, he dinked it. It didn't quite come up into him. It didn't quite come up to him, but it bounced. It couldn't have bounced perfectly, more perfectly. And He just glided away and there was no hope of anyone catching him. But I'm interested, Willie, seeing as you played in the same team with him. So you were wing back then, he was wing forward. So did you mark him in training or how did that work? Or did he even go training?
No, he went training. I wasn't wing back. I played my first game out there cornerback. I was wing back, I was cornerback. I never marked him in training, thankfully. And not that Donlin was just so relaxed. Like Donlin would walk around like, you know, and we played him in an under 21 All-Ireland semi-final, like I was saying, and he wasn't great that day. And we had played them in an under 21 challenge game earlier that year. And Donlin just walked around the place. Now, every now and then he would really burst into life and he'd stick one in the top corner. Then he'd go back out walking around. He was a strange sort of character on the field, you know, but just that pace was just absolutely incredible. But arguably, we'll talk about these lads in the performance of the weekend, because John Dively's performance in the second half was very, very underrated, and Niall Finnegan's as well. And it's just Jaff Allen and Donlan took it to new levels. That, like, Dively, his pass to Donlan for Joyce's goal was a brilliant pass right into his path. And the thing about Dively's passes, like compared to Nooks or Buckley's, is that they were going almost as long, but they weren't hopeful deliveries. They were seeing somebody and they were actually into their path. He gave a lovely, beautiful, long ball into Joyce, who was out in front. You know, he gave it to Donlan another time. These were passes over 40 metres. They weren't clearances, you know, like a lot of the balls we saw in the 1990s.
Yeah, and like with all due respect to John Dively as well, is that like they were passes and they had direction on them. The way they were delivered, let's say, was still fairly straightforward. It was still kind of like Dively giving everything he got into a pass, as opposed to curling one with the inside of his boot or maybe putting it on the outside of his boot.
They were all pretty much punt passes.
But they were
to somebody though. They weren't hopeful ones.
Yeah.
He gave another one off his left foot in the second half off over the under the Cusack stand. I think it could have been to Derek Savage or somebody. But like, I mean, these were passes. He saw somebody and drove it to them. And it was bouncing before them. It was a beautiful ball for forwards.
That's exactly what I mean. And like, we went back to it earlier on in terms of the lack of sophistication with the Kildare ball that was going in, which is basically just high and lumped. And again, that could have been a tactic, just let it into the full forward line. When Galway were on top and when Galway got their period of dominance in the second half, early in the second half particularly, the ball that they were buttoned into those quality forwards. I mean, like, we get to Jaff Allen again, but like Jaff Allen had a poor enough first half by his standards and then completely turned around the second. But a lot of that was down to the quality of ball that he was getting in. Niall Finnegan, the same. Park Joyce, the same. Derek Savage, I don't think he scored, but got on a lot of ball that was coming, particularly from Dively. Dively wasn't the only one, but he was probably the biggest exponent of the long, accurate ball that Galway used. But like that, I think that the contrast between that ball, the Galway were delivering in the second half when they were on top, and the quality of ball that Kildare were delivering the first half when they were on top, was probably the main factor of the game, probably the win in the game for Galway in the end.
Yeah, and I think what kind of stood out with Galway for some of their scores was just the interplay between their forwards. Like, oftentimes with Kildare, points would come off a breaking ball or, you know, something knocked down, or a solo effort by Eddie McCormack or, you know, a piece of brilliance by him. Whereas, like, Pádraig Joyce's point in the first half was a ball to Derek Savage, who played a lovely little ball into Joyce. You know, in the second half then, you have Donlan making a great run, throwing it back out to Finnegan, you know, who stuck it over the bar. There were more worked scores, a lot of them, you know, kind of way, like, true good forward play rather than hopeful ones.
Yeah, and let's not forget Derek Savage's little dink ball at the end of Michael Donnellan's solo run, where he was kind of held up by the defender, and just this little glorious dink into Sean Ogdenhwaire, who took it on the run and kind of put it over the bar.
Yeah.
But you're right, But you're right, that and whether this was, and I imagine it was a mixture of kind of instinctive, because like because those Galway forwards had such individual quality, and something that John O'Mahony would have worked on as well. But like, and you could tell as well that like when Galway got their tails up, and Galway are traditionally like this, Galway are still like this today, that when Galway get their tails up, their confidence just absolutely soars, and this sort of stuff, this sort of neat interplay and kind of like skillful stuff just comes out in abundance, and that really kind of took hold from when they got settled early second half to the end, really, when I think Kildare got it to within three but didn't really look like kind of clawing it back.
No. And I suppose when Brian Murphy came on, then the first thing he did, he caught the first ball, laid it on to Pádraig Brennan, he stuck it over the bar, and then he could have got the goal. And then you're wondering, like I said in part one, if they were your tactics, start with Brian Murphy, and that's kind of it. One other point I wanted to make was Martin McNamara's kickouts. He varied them very well, didn't he? Like, I mean, there was a lot of different, there was a lot of different targets. He even went one short to Ray Silk, which at that time of, you know, in the 1990s Gaelic football, going short to a wing back wasn't very common. But Kevin Walsh was a big target of his.
Yeah.
Not booming on top of him, because Willie McCreary was good in the air and so was Buckley. Kind of Walsh running to the wing and getting it out there.
Yeah, not at the start. At the start, I think McNamara kind of went straight down the middle and then realised that, like, Kildare
more
were
second
on
top. Half, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kildare were on top here. And then started to utilise that. Kevin Welch got a couple of balls under the stand where it bounced into him. So it was obviously something they worked at, because McNamara's trajectory that he had to kick out had to be quite low. So it bounced lovely into Kevin Welch. The one that you're on about, Ray Silk, I remember it last night. I think McNamara could have taken that with his left foot.
Yeah, he switched feet, yeah.
It went to show how ill-prepared teams were for short kickouts back then, because it wasn't the cleanest strike in the world. I mean, it bobbled all the way to Ray Silk, who still got the ball in acres of space, because, you know, short kickouts were unheard of back then. And probably for a team like Kildare, who were so tall. Like, I mean, Kildare had, like, as well as having McCreary and Buckley, I think Eddie McCormack wasn't the tallest, but I think he could have won a couple of kickouts. They had Dermot Early obviously coming back in. Their full forward line was quite tall as well. So they're probably used to doing it themselves anyway, where all the ball kind of goes down the middle. Probably just used to playing against teams who did that as well. So that was, I think that the strategy of kind of going a little shorter would have been born out of a little bit of Kildare dominance, but stuff they'd worked on as well. But very, very unfamiliar for the era as well. But that wasn't a... Yeah, I think McNamara got away with that one, because it wasn't. It took about 5 seconds to get to Ray Silk. It was so poorly kicked. But listen, he got the ball and he got it in acres of space. The job was done.
Yeah, it was a dribbler. That's what you call them. But like, I mean, to dominate the second half as they did, usually teams have a little bit of dominance and then the other team take over. But Galway just dominated the second half. It was a complete domination and Kildare had no answer to it. Like, the only answer Kildare had was a couple of Eddie McCormack runs and he was pulled down. You know, they were just, it was a complete transformation for 2-1 outsiders to be 3 down at half time and not looking like it's going well, to turn it around and rip up the script. Like, I mean, it was as good a second half performance, I would say, ever in any All Ireland final, really.
Yeah, I think so. And like, hindsight is great now. I was looking back at the game last night and I was thinking, even though the Kildare had the better of the first half and they were on top, I didn't feel like they were in control, let's say. And obviously it's easy for me to say that, because I knew that they didn't go on to win the game. But like, I think if you contrast that with when Galway got on top in the second half, they were in complete control. They were cruising to the point that they got 7 points up at one stage. And I didn't feel it was ill-deserved. I thought it was completely deserved. And they turned that around in so little time. And it was because of a number of, we talked about the kickouts just there, the interplay of the forwards and the fact that like some of the lads who maybe had struggled a bit in the first half started to get on top, no more so than Jaff Allen. But it was Galway at their very, very best. So, you know, it was one of the best Galway teams at their very, very best. And it's typical of the great Galway teams that like, they're a real joy to watch. And they have that confidence and they have that little bit of cockiness to Galway are likely as likely to do it on the biggest stage of all as they would on a, you know, in a league game that doesn't matter when there's not as much pressure, and they really delivered when it mattered most. To the point that they probably had their foot off the pedal a little bit at the end. I mean, all their subs to me watching back seemed to have gathered about 10 minutes before the end of the game, and then Brennan hit the post and I think, geez, we're getting a bit carried away with ourselves here, lads. But not to take away from the quality of Galway's second half performance in general, which was, as you said, as good, especially for an All-Ireland final, as you're going to see.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you mentioned Jaff Allen, so we'll come back with performance of the weekend. I'm sure he's going to feature there.
The best bit of advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
It's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
So performance of the weekend, we're going to start with Jaff Allen. And this was one of the best turnarounds in performance I've ever seen, because I have to say, when I start a game and I'm not playing well, that trend will probably continue until the 70th minute. I don't ever remember me thinking or remember games where I'm playing shit and then all of a sudden I start playing well. Usually I'm on it early and I continue on. You know, you've played well the whole game. So, like, I mean, for him, he lost his first two balls to Glenn Ryan, then won another one and gave the hand pass away. Do you remember it was a half goal chance? He tried to give it into Niall Finnegan. Then the fourth ball he got, he tried a diagonal ball infield and he kicked that away. I think it was Anthony Rainbow intercepted it. Then he won a free from catching a kick out, and he caught a few in the second half as well. But let's just say his first half was forgettable. And to turn it around the way he did, the first one, like, I mean, he got the point under the Cusack stand, and this was kind of one that was being passed around. No one was taking responsibility. So Ja just said, "Here, I'll take a crack at this." And that went over, just scraped over the crossbar. And that just changed things completely for him. And his second half performance, between the points, the sidelines, the catch and the kickouts, it was just a phenomenal second half performance.
Yeah, it really was. like my notes last night, I was thinking, this is not like Jaff Allen. Like the first 15 minutes. And I remember Jaff Allen having an unbelievable game. What was I watching the wrong game years ago? Because he couldn't do anything right. And like he probably wasn't the only one. And something I was thinking about was that mistakes were probably more tolerated there. Like I know it's Jaff Allen, so he wouldn't have been taken off. But other people that made kind of maybe the similar level of mistakes probably would have been, you know, given the curly finger before half time. But yeah, there was a couple of moments, I think, towards the end of the first half. Catching the kick out was one of them that kind of would have maybe thinking, right, I'm getting into the game here. And to be fair to him, it wasn't as if he wasn't in the vicinity of where the ball was. He was involved in the game. It wasn't really working out for him in the first half. But then completely, things changed completely in the second half. And just to say that there's the two, so he got 3 points that I can remember from play in the second half that are as good as...
I think he got 2 from play and 1 from the sideline, wasn't it?
Sorry, 2 from play and 1 from the sideline. So all of those 3 points were as good as anything you'll see. So the year before, obviously, was the Morris Fitz final. Jaff Allen kicks a ridiculous sideline from in the second half. That's arguably harder because, like, let's say Jaff would have been kicking with the inside of his boot, which is more of a natural angle for a left-footed kicker, let's say. But from the distance he was kicking at, you know, a lot of people would go with the outside of the boot because they might get more distance. But that was an unbelievable one. The one he got to start him off was obviously the wrong side for a left-footer on the sideline with Glenn Ryan on top of him. And then the other score he got was the most stereotypical Jaff Allen score you'll ever see. Yeah. On the right, gets the ball in loads of space, cut on the right-hand side, cutting in on his left, does the Jaff jink. And I was thinking last night, was that like, that Jaff Allen jink, it reminds me of Sean Kavanagh, and that like, Sean Kavanagh has this dummy that everybody knows is coming but can do nothing to stop it, because the speed at which Jaff Allen used to do that jink, always onto his left foot, but like it was just ridiculous and nobody could stop him. Probably owed a lot to it, like Jaff Allen was a really good rugby player as well, so that like it was champagne stuff from Jaff Allen in the second half. And when you put in a kind of performance like that, and especially in a performance as good as Galway delivered in the second half, you're willing to forget, you know, a couple of lost balls or, you know, the goal chance that he spurned in the second half. But he was absolutely outstanding, a joy to watch.
That was it. It was a great ball by Kevin Walsh for his second point, the one he jinked back inside Glenn Ryan. And you were almost like, oh, God help Glenn Ryan when he got the ball, because like you said, he was in so much space that there was only one thing going to happen, you know, with his tail up. And it was interesting, the following after that point from play, he caught the next kick out. Do you know what I mean? So like, I mean, it was just a phenomenal performance. He was brilliant in the air. He was well able to get up. So anything that was falling around his area was kind of his ball, because he was so strong as well. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. Is actually, I was at a function of Jazz, and he got some Lifetime Achievement Award, and this was back in 1998. So I had made the Compromise Rules panel, and I was at the All-Stars that year. The year he won Player of the Year, and he won the Player of the Year, and he was walking back down through the audience, and he said this as part of his speech, because I was there giving out medals, and he said he was walking back down after collecting his Player of the Year, and I tapped him on the arm and called him down to say something to him, and I says to him, don't let it go to your head now, Jack. So this was a little bollocks of 19 years of age telling the Player of the Year, who's just won it all Ireland, not to let it go to his head. Like, I mean, such absolute nonsense I'd have come out with. But I would have to say, looking at that whole All Ireland final, I wouldn't have Jack Allen as man of the match in the final. Michael Donlan, for me, over the whole course of the game, was man of the match. He only scored 2 points. But he made a brilliant solo run for the Sean Hogue, the queer point, which the iconic solo run that nobody will ever forget. He set up the goal. He set up Niall Finnegan for a point after cleaning Anthony Rainbow. Remember, Anthony Rainbow pulled his jersey. He was just completely out of ideas. And then another run set up Horace Joyce, who had a very bad wide off his left. And he had another run that set Ja Fallon up, who was fouled for a free. Like, I mean, if you add up everything Michael Donlan contributed to that game over the whole course of the game, you know, especially in the first half when Galway weren't firing on all cylinders, surely the man of the match was Michael Donlan.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a few contenders, like Jaff Allen being one, probably get to a couple others, Tomás Mannion definitely, and a couple of the Kildare lads have stood out. But like, listen, this is the Michael Donlan final. And it's not just because that solo run that he did in the first half was ended up voted, I think, as the top GAA moment of all time, I think, in some poll that was done in the mid 2000s. But they, like, of all the Galway players that were kind of, that were fighting against the tide, I would say, in the first half, because as I said, I think Kildare were well on top. Like Donlan to me could even got man the match in the first half, even though Kildare, to me, were that dominant. Not only did he get his points and do that solo run, but just he was the main kind of focal point for the Galway fight back in the first half, and then kind of carried it on in the second half as well. But it's one of the, to me anyway, watching it back last night only confirmed to me how good Michael Donlan was in that game, because I think there's a danger of people getting misty-eyed about, and maybe I was guilty of that with Jaff Allen, and particularly his first half performance. But the people years on, they get a bit nostalgic and misty-eyed about how good players were, or how good a certain game was, or how good an individual performance was last night. But to me, if anything, Michael Donlan was even better than I remember in that final. And like, just like, with all due respect to any other contenders, I think he was head and shoulders above anyone else on the day.
Yeah, so incredible stuff from Michael Donlan. I think Niall Finnegan deserves a mention in this as well, Conor. Like, I mean, his second half performance was brilliant. And in fairness, he was out in front a lot during the first half. Again, when Galway weren't really firing, he was always showing. He was marking Brian Lacey, who was All-Star that year. And he got 2 from play in the second half, celebrated his first one. And he had two frees in the second half as well. So 4 in total, was the top scorer. And Niall Finnegan is unfortunate in that a lot of other All-Ireland finals, Niall Finnegan would have been man of the match.
Yeah, I think so. And it, like, he just had the kind of misfortune of playing alongside, well, not the misfortune, but in this instance of playing alongside Michael Donlan and maybe Jaff Allen as well. But first half, like, something I noted last night particularly was that he was getting the ball under the, I think it could have been the Cusick stand, but he was winning the ball in front of Brian Lacey.
The
Hogan stand. Brian Lacey at the time would have been one of the best kind of man-on-man defenders in the game. And he didn't maybe he was trying to take him on, but didn't really get past him. Lacey was a tough nut to crack. But put a couple of really dangerous balls across the face of the across the face of the goal in the first half that the Galway probably could have capitalised a bit better on. But then second half, I thought he really came to life. Got a couple of really gutsy scores. As you said, he took a bit of treatment off John Finn that it led to him missing the kind of an easy score as well. And then when Galway's tails were up, I think he might have got two in quick succession as well, one from a free and one from play as well. But like outside of Donnellan and Jeff Allen, definitely amongst the Galway forwards, I think Tomás Mannion might have a shout as well for Galway players that kind of stood out. But outside of Donnellan and Joyce, he definitely was a standout Galway forward. And like looking back on it, like must have been very satisfied with kind of his own display.
Yeah, definitely. We've mentioned Tomás Mannion already. He was outstanding right throughout the game as well. Absolutely brilliant, tigerish cornerback, a nightmare to mark because he was so aggressive. John Dively, we've mentioned him as well. He definitely deserves a shout. Seanóg the player, I remember having a better game than he did. He got on a lot of ball, but Eddie McCormack caused a lot of problems as well. Funnily enough, I marked Eddie McCormack earlier that year. 1998 was my debut season. Eddie gave me an awful roasting to the point where I was taken off. But they had a great battle, actually, because I would say that Seanóg the player and Eddie McCormack both deserve a nomination in this.
Well, Eddie McCormack I have Eddie McCormack down as probably the Kildare player I thought played the best. If it was a Kildare man in the match, I would have had Eamon McCormack. Not just the first half points. He had a couple of real driving runs at the Galway defence in the first half, and he, along with say Niall Buckley, he was one of the ones that took the fight to Galway in the second half as well. And I suppose like the thing about Seanóg the player is that his performance is bookended by, so his first point was after the Michael Donnellan solo run, which I think was maybe after around 10 minutes, and then his last point was the last point of the game. And it came when, you know, Kildare had committed to a lot of bodies in attack. He got on the end of it. He got on the end of a kind of flowing Galway counter-attack and was able to kick the ball over the bar. So I'm the same as you. Like, I don't remember it being as iconic maybe as it's remembered. The only thing I will say about Seanóg the player is that I remember him. I watching the game back last night, he got on a lot of breaking ball.
He
got on a lot of breaking ball and dirty breaking ball, especially in the first half when, as I said, I don't think Galway weren't on top. Like there wasn't a lot of clean ball won by, especially by Kevin Walsh and Sean O'Donnell around the middle. So Seanóg the player did kind of mop up a lot of that. But if I was to say, let's say in the Galway half back line, for example, I would have had Dively ahead of him, you know, in terms of their impact on the game, even though Seanóg the player will end the game with 2 points to his name and two iconic points, given that one of them was the last one and the first one came at the end of the most iconic solo run probably in Gaelic football history.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, the performance the weekend, I think everybody's going to guess who got this, so that's Michael Donnellan. I think an absolutely phenomenal. It's a weird one. I think Jeff Allen won Player of the Year. I think Michael Donnellan might. There's another one, a Texaco Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Got that. Who got man of the match in the final? I think Ja got it as well, but I suppose there's... Was it Ja got it at the time, the man of the match in the final? I'm not quite sure.
I thought it was Donnellan, But I do remember there being separate kind of Player of the Year awards at the time, because I was thinking when you were on about Jeff Allen, I was like, oh, Michael Donnellan won one as well. But there was two. There was the Texaco and the Player of the Year one too.
Yeah.
But if Michael Donnellan didn't get man of the match, I'm happy to revise it, you know, 22 years later and say that whoever did win the man of the match, it's taken away from him and the award is now officially Michael Donnellan's.
That's it. And GAA performance the weekend goes to Michael Donnellan as well. So just to top off a brilliant career, you could add that to your list of honours. So that's it. Right, Conor, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Monday and we'll do another All-Ireland. We might try to broaden this out to any match. There's a lot of people asking for Leitrim's Connacht title in 1994, where they beat Roscommon, Galway, and beat Mayo in the final.
I'm not available that day, Willie.
Because I was looking at some Niall Finnegan stuff, and Niall was around, obviously mentioned to him, when Leitrim beat Galway, and that was seen as like a low point for Galway. So that'll just tell you, Leitrim beat the three big ones in Connacht to win the Connacht title in 94. That would be a nice game to review. Problem is, it's not on YouTube, but I might try and find it somewhere and we'll take it from there. Right, Conor, I'll talk to you and we'll see you on Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh.
both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.